Welcome back, everybody, to another Grayscale Gorilla podcast. I am your host today, Chad Ashley. We've got a really special guest on the show today. My good pal, Russ Gauthier, is going to be on. And if you don't know Russ, you should, because he's worked on some amazing films. He's got a great history. He's also been a guest speaker at many Maxon events. You probably have seen him in his silky smooth voice. So today we're going to talk all about Russ and his story coming up through Virginia, going to New York, and now what he's doing these days, and particularly about his journey into Houdini. He's been a longtime Houdini user, so I pick his brain about how he got started with Houdini, how he uses it now, what does he like about it, what does he wish people knew about it. The reason is because Russ is actually teaching a really amazing new course over on Grayscale Gorilla Plus all about Houdini. So sit back, relax, get yourself a coffee, and enjoy the podcast. Welcome to another Grayscale Gorilla podcast. Today, I'm your host, Chad Ashley. I've got a very special guest. I'm very excited to have our next guest on. He is... You may have seen him around, actually. He's been quite a bit found at the local and not so local Maxon events, doing all sorts of really cool demos. He's also sort of been around the motion design scene for quite some time. He's one of the probably the most eloquent speakers I've ever heard. I'm going to go ahead and give you a lot of praise before I tell you. announce you. That's just how this goes. His voice is like butter, and I love the guy to death. He is super talented. Welcome to the show, Russ Gauthier.
Hey, thank you for having me. Really happy to be on the podcast, man.
Yeah, super stoked to have you here. So real quick, I wanted to point out exactly, like, I guess the reason that the catalyst for having you on the show, it's sort of an announcement, I guess. You may have already heard it. You may have heard us hint about it. You may have heard us like talk about it briefly, but Russ is lending his wealth of Houdini knowledge to Grayscale Gorilla Plus, and he is teaching a fantastic course on sort of getting up and running with Houdini. And it's sort of built around Cinema 4D and the motion designer, and trying to create a set of videos that sort of like take the edge off, if you will.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, because it can be, you know, Houdini is intimidating. I'm not going to lie. I tried to get into it 3 or 4 times myself, and it was painful. Let's just say that. And
it
when
took
I started
five.
I'm just below that, but I'm getting close. And I think your videos are what's going to get me off that little rock that I'm sitting on that I just can't seem to get off of with that program. And I'm like halfway through your stuff, and it is freaking amazing. But I don't want to turn this into a giant infomercial, because really I want to learn more about you. I want to learn where you came from. I want to learn how you got into Houdini. I want to learn what you're doing now, what you did 5 years ago, all that stuff. So let's roll back. Let's sort of rewind a minute and talk about some of your earlier work. Now, if I'm not mistaken, you've got quite a few movie credits on your IMDb. Is that right?
That's true. Yep. I do.
So I'm not going to list them all. There's like a lot, like a lot of Marvel movies on this list. And so you were doing most of that work at Perception, right?
That's correct. Yep.
Tell me about what the heck you were doing on all these Marvel movies.
All right. So at Perception, we actually do quite a wide range of things. Everything from FUI design, that's like screen graphics, HUDs, holograms, that kind of thing, to like title sequences, and then even getting into like almost technological consulting work. So with movies like Black Panther, they had actually come to us and asked us to help them kind of conceptualize the technology that goes into the world of Wakanda. And so we had a really great working relationship with Ryan Coogler and the whole Marvel Studios executive team, where we were really working hand in hand with them in so many ways to craft all of the technology that you see in the world of Wakanda, like the sand, holograms and everything.
Oh man, that stuff was so great.
Yeah,
that
we spent
so killer.
Spent months. I think all in, we were about 18 months on that project, which was a total dream. We also did the animatic and kind of previs and story development for the prologue to the movie that, you know, was rendered all in sand. And then we did the title sequence at the end. So
that's insane.
Yeah, like it was a dream.
I've always wondered about that kind of work and how much of that is being done before. I mean, I guess my question is like, how much of that is like, are you putting on the screens on set and how much of it is comped in later? Like, how much are you doing beforehand?
So with that one in particular, that was a pretty unique project for us because a lot of what we had done was done even before the script got finalized, before they even shot anything. They were really kind of crafting some story beats around some of the things that we were creating. And there's actually this really, really cool image of Ryan Coogler on set with Danai Gurira, who plays Okoye, where it looks like he's showing her how the hologram is going to form in her hand. It's really a fantastic moment. It's like a behind the scenes, like on set photo. It was really cool for us because that comes directly from a lot of the explorations that we were doing around how the bead would roll off of the bracelet and into the hand and form like a little sand puddle before kind of springing up into the shape of an actual hologram and then getting color applied to it and everything. Yeah, it was really wild to see that, you know.
That's crazy. So was that all done in Houdini then?
Yeah, a lot of that was Houdini. So we did, Perception is primarily a Cinema 4D studio, but I'd been playing with Houdini for quite a while up to that point. And so we got a hold of a license of Houdini specifically to work on Black Panther initially. Mm-hmm. Houdini, of course, played a wider role in many other things that we've worked on since, but for Black Panther specifically, Houdini played a really key role in helping us kind of visualize some of the technology.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, I don't think you could pull off some of the stuff from all that sand, all that sand effects and whatnot. I couldn't see that being pulled off with anything else, right?
Yeah. Yeah, Houdini has a very robust sand solver and grain solver that's phenomenal. It's crazy.
Wow. And was Black Panther the first show that you were sort of like really utilizing Houdini on?
Yeah, absolutely. So we got Houdini in the studio specifically for Black Panther. So prior to that, I'd been using Houdini on my own for quite a while. But I was really the only person at Perception, at least at the time, that was Houdini fluent.
So you get this job, you sort of realize that, oh man, we're gonna have to use Houdini on this. Nobody else is really knows it but me. Like, what was that like? Was that stressful being sort of the only person on, or did you have to hire people that freelancers, whatnot, that knew Houdini, or how did that work?
Yeah, actually. I did the bulk of the Houdini work, but I believe you know Trevor Kerr. He worked with us.
He's my boy. Yeah. Trevor's my boy.
Gotta love Trevor. Good guy. He was with us for a few weeks helping out on some of the sand visualizations as well. And, you know, we had done multiple rounds of explorations with them as they were kind of honing the script and really working out these story beats. They would come to us when they had, like, questions, or they wanted us to help them visualize something so that they could direct actors or, you know, move action around however they wanted to do it. And so we did lots of these kind of like you know, 6 to 8 week sprints where we were really working on like a handful of technologies at a time. And Trevor was with us for a little while working on some of that stuff in tandem with me as well, working in Houdini on that.
That's awesome. Yeah, he's really taken the Houdini, man. Like he tries to to get me on it for,
God, I bet,
probably forever right now. And it's sort of a running joke, you know, like he's always like, oh, have you, is it, because I think I told him at the beginning of the summer, I'm like, oh, you know, as soon as I wrap up this material library, I'm going to dive into Houdini. He's like, okay, yeah, yeah. Okay, you better though. You actually better do it. And I'm like, yeah, yeah, I'll do it. And then I wrapped up the material collection and he's like, so are you gonna like learn it now? And I'm like, yeah, no, I just got this other thing, you know, as soon as I get this other thing done. But yeah, I mean, I really want to dig in. It's one of those things though, that like it's pretty daunting, and
yeah,
and the idea so. Of it, we'll get into that later, but I'm stoked that like you were able to sort of bring it into a studio on such a high pressure job too, which has got to be a little unnerving, because I mean, it sounds like you're using the program, but it's always nervous when you bring in a new tool into like a situation like that, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, especially with a project like that, that everybody is really close to. And, you know, obviously we hold the Marvel crew in the absolute highest regard. They're one of our favorite people to work with. Obviously we want to do the best work that we possibly can. And so bringing in new variables, always a little bit, nerve wracking, but, we made it work.
Yeah, dude. I mean, the results speak for themselves. I think it's a fantastic piece of work. And, you know, I think that happened. When was that movie out? It was like 2 years ago, right?
Yep. February. Say it was February 2018.
Yeah. Wow. I was actually pretty close. That's rare for me. So let's rewind even further back, because you and I have some mutual friends going all the way back to Virginia and your beginnings. Well, sort of beginnings at the Martin Agency. So you were at the Martin Agency as a motion designer, and that sort of turned into a studio. Can you tell folks about how that happened and what that was like?
Yeah, absolutely. So I actually got my job at the Martin Agency. My very first role there was with a crew called Studio Squared that I don't know that they're still around. They might have split off into a different group, but Studio Squared was this really kind of unique crew set up specifically to do in-store ad development for Walmart. So all of the Walmart stores have these like screens on, you know, all over the store that, you know, run various bits of content. And so we would end up doing tons of these things. I mean, it was a really intense kind of time, you know. It was and for me, this was like my first like proper motion design job. I had had, you know, some freelance gigs prior to that, and I'd spent a couple years working at another studio doing more like interactive design and animation, doing Flash stuff. Yeah, like Flash was my jam back in the day.
Well, I would have never guessed that on the way, like Flash. Wow. Okay. Wow. I mean, like Flash. I remember those days when like that was the thing, right? There was there was like web cartoons and stuff all done completely in Flash and all that. Yeah, that was
so
big.
I picked up Flash in like the late 90s and took like a really deep dive into it. Cause I'd always like, as a kid, I always like did like stop motion animation with like action figures and stuff in my parents' basement. I was super stoked about that. And then when I realized that I can take this program and I can make things move and I can put it on the internet, that was it, man. I was absolutely hooked, super stoked about it. So like I took a really deep dive into Flash. I learned tons of action script. I ended up taking this like all the way through school. Like I got a very traditional graphic design degree, like very theory based, like no, like when I went through school, there was like almost no practical kind of application classes. It was all theory, which was fantastic for me because then I can take that theory and I can kind of apply it to anything. And at the time I was super stoked about like animation on the internet, right?
Yeah. So where did you go to school real quick? I just wanted to...
I went to VCU in Richmond in the graphic design program there, which was awesome.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, when I was in school, I didn't study 3D or any of that stuff either. I studied film and traditional animation. So yeah. I understand how that works. I kind of wish I would have done what you did and like actually do some, you know, actual graphic design stuff. Cause I learned that all on the job, which is sort of hard, but yeah. Okay. So you're in there, you're doing graphic design.
Yep.
You jump into the Flash game.
Yep.
Now you're making Walmart animations inside of Walmart. So how the hell do you go from making Walmart animations to working on Marvel movies?
That's a real good question. So the crew I was working on, you know, the Walmart stuff wasn't like the most compelling content in the world. And, you know, for the most part, it was very much a quantity over quality kind of thing. Like we would have to animate like 50 or 75 of these little things every day. And so you don't have a lot of time to like put into like really developing them for the most part. But what it did teach me was it'd be very fast, very efficient, and very organized. And those were things that I took everywhere in my career ever since then. The other thing that it did was that it taught me to look for the opportunities where I could take things just a little bit further, right? Because like every now and then, one of these things would come through that had like just a little bit more budget. And I knew that like the creatives working on the design side, they were like itching for something that was like a little bit more interesting. And so when I caught wind of one of these things coming through that had like, oh, we got like a week to do one of these instead of an hour, that sounds awesome. So I would always approach them with some interesting ideas and kind of see where it goes. And, you know, we had a really tight crew there, which was awesome. And so I did that for a while. And then Scott Frisky, who was the EP at Martin Agency's kind of internal editorial facility called Running with Scissors. So he reached out to me, like he was technically my boss, but I worked in like a different building. And so I didn't really see him all that often. I'd see him at lunch and stuff like that. But I sat down with him, you know, and he and I kind of hatched this plan for creating internal motion graphics department as well. Like that was sort of a separate thing from Studio Squared, because Studio Squared was very dedicated to Walmart. And Scott had seen this kind of need for a lot of the editorial that was coming through Running with Scissors, you know, really needed things like end tags and lower thirds and light visual effects and that kind of thing. So it was something that he and I kind of sat down and hashed out. And it started with me with a laptop in an edit bay. You know, I didn't even have like a proper room or a desk or anything. Like it was just me banging out these lower thirds, I think, for a Hanes commercial. You know, and it was a lot of fun. You know, I mean, it was something that was like, I was able to take what I learned with the Studio Squared crew and really apply it to, more of a broadcast motion graphics kind of
thing. Went, you know, through the gauntlet on these like high, you know, fast turnaround jobs. I really truly believe that like trial by fire and work. I think tight deadlines and situations like that tightens up a team to the point where it just becomes like you have a shorthand with everybody and you know exactly what you need to do. And that can be really fun. And sometimes those restraints, those time restraints or creative restraints can really be exciting for a designer.
100%, man. And, you know, so that it really taught me. It taught me to be highly organized and fast. And so I get to apply that to the world of broadcast motion graphics. And we fired up this department. At the time I was actually teaching at VCU as well. And I had a student of mine who was just awesome. Like he was so good. And I told Scott, I was like, hey, let's get this kid before he gets snatched up somewhere else. Let's grab him as he's coming out of school. And we ended up hiring him up, and he and I worked together real closely for a while. His name is Georgi Kuznetsov, or Gosha Kuznetsov, as he's known.
Oh, is that the Gosha that I know?
Yep, probably.
Dude, that dude is insanely talented.
Yeah, he's wicked. He's super good. So I got him up to speed on Cinema 4D in the early days, and he and I were jamming on end tags and all kinds of stuff for Running with Scissors for a while. Then we started getting more and more busy with more and more clients. We hired up a couple other people to help us out. And so we had this, you know, we were humming along really, really well. And, you know, it had been about 3 years or so for me. And I'd always kind of had the itch to move to New York City. You know, I kind of I had this like this thing that I had to do this. And so I hit the point after 3 years. So I was like, yeah, you know what? It's time. It's time I do this thing. And I, you know, put in my notice at Martin and, you know, had lots of like tear filled hugs and goodbyes. And I packed all my stuff up and moved to New York City. And since then, so the little department that I started has now branched off and become its own separate company called Hue and Cry. So they hired up a creative director named Magnus Hierta, who is awesome. I didn't get a ton of time to work with him because the overlap was pretty short. But we also got a hold of Andrew Prusalis, who's also now at Man vs. Machine with
this is so incestuous, dude.
Yeah, I know. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. So like I had like a couple weeks of overlap with Andrew, which was not nearly enough time because I love that dude. And
yeah, he's great.
I really, really wish that I had more time to work with him. Because he's a madman. He's just crazy good.
Dude, everybody you name so far, I don't know Magnus, but it's like an all-star team. So for those of you unaware, so Trevor Kerr works at Man V in LA. Andrew works at Man V in LA. Gosha used to work at Man V in LA. I think he's now, where's he now? Is he at?
He's freelancing. Last I heard he was bouncing around to some different projects. Actually need to catch up with him. So yeah, I don't know where to be.
There's like a crazy amount of talent that was coming through Virginia at that time, which is really sort of weird. And like, it's not a town or a state rather. And this was, the capital, right? Is that where it's just not somewhere where I would have normally thought, oh yeah, that's where, you know, four amazing talented people are going to come from.
It's they the can come from anywhere. Graphics. Yeah, no.
Yeah, right. I mean, they said the same thing about Chicago, I guess. But so yeah, okay. It's Virginia. You leave right when this thing sort of takes off.
Yep.
Was there any sort of like, oh man, I wish I would have stuck. I should have stuck around. It sounds like they're doing some cool stuff over there, and they got some good people. Was there any regret there?
No, no. I wanted to move to New York City so bad. Like I was, of course, really, really sad to leave all of the absolutely fantastic people at the Martin Agency, all of my friends that I'd kind of come up with. And I was really excited to see where Magnus was going to take everything, because like I kind of got it to a point where it was like sustainable and like, you know, we were doing it, we were doing our thing. But Magnus really had like a vision for it being something much more than what it was. And I was super stoked to see him kind of take it and run with it. And he ended up really shaping it into something that's very, very special. And for me, it was, you know, I was living my dream. I moved to New York City, got like a studio apartment, me and the dog. And I hit the streets and knocked on doors and tried to drum up business. And
just imagining you like actually imagining you walking down knock, the streets knock. Like, hey, wait, you got any motion design for me? All right. So you're in New York.
Yep.
How is that how did you land at Perception? Like, how did that?
It was totally out of the blue, honestly. Like a lot of these things, you know, it's being in the right place at the right time in a lot of ways. And I want to say it was April 2014 that I put out a new reel, and I threw it up on the New York City Motion Graphics Facebook group. And John Lepore, who's the creative director over at Perception, he saw it and reached out to me and asked me to come in for a chat. And so he and I sat down and just kind of talked it out. And the in the conference room there at Perception and just got to know each other a little bit. And I ended up coming on freelance for a while. I was actually freelance for like 12 weeks with them before, before I finally came on full time. But, yeah, that was 5 years ago. It's crazy.
Wow. So 5 years making killer work over at Perception, and now you've got a pretty big change coming, right?
I do. Yeah, that's right. So here in about 2 weeks, at least at the time of this recording, my wife and I are, you know, uprooting and moving to Los Angeles with no real plans, honestly. Like, it's it sounds insane, and I totally get that, but I feel fortunate to be, you know, friends with lots of people out in the industry out there,
something tells me, Russ, you're going to be just fine.
I hope so.
Yeah, I think you're good. I mean, you got a few good things on your reel, you know, like a few things that people might recognize, you know, like the Walmart stuff.
Yeah.
You know, you got that stuff, so you'll be all right. Well, that's exciting, man. I feel like, I feel like that's a good place for you, honestly. I mean, given the fact that you did the East Coast thing for 5 years or so.
Seven years, I loved it.
Wow. See, I could never do that. I could never live in New York. That's one city. I love visiting there, and I have a lot of friends that live there, but I'm just not a huge city guy. So, LA is way more in my speed, drive places, park, that sort of thing. Like, that's way more my vibe. But yeah, I'm excited for you. I feel like there is so many good studios out there.
Oh yeah,
you already know everybody. I mean, Andrew's out there, Trevor's out there,
yep.
Gosha's out there. Like, there's all sorts of people out there that you're going to get hooked up with and do some amazing stuff. I'm excited to see what you do next. But I wanted to chat a little bit about this Houdini business, because I've never. I started using the first 3D program I ever used. I'm going to date myself really quickly here. I used Alias Power Animator.
Yeah.
And then it became Maya. And I used Maya for a number of years. And then I moved to 3ds Max and did that for a number of years. Dabbled in Softimage XSI, rest in peace.
Mm-hmm.
And then ended up in Cinema. Now, Houdini was always there. It was sort of always seen as the, that's for VFX artists. That's right. For people that are like doing feature films. It's like math. It's like crazy complicated. you don't want to touch that thing. Like, forget it. And, you know, I listened for the most part. I was like, it's interesting. I like what they're doing. Honestly, like, this is how much of a design nerd I am. I always thought that SideFX had a pretty tight identity package.
Yeah, very much.
Like, they've always had like a really, you know, an identifiable look, the color scheme, the fonts. I'm talking like maybe not early days, but like, you know, like 5-10 years ago, like they got stepped it up, you know, they got some good stuff.
Absolutely.
And that kind of was like, oh, you know what? That's pretty cool. Then I started hearing about more people using it. And then I started getting more into cinema. Like, when I started learning cinema, it started to become this rising tide. And cinema was a rising tide for me too. Like, cinema coming from Maya Max was always kind of like, I looked down on it, and like, it was sort of like this thing that was like, you know, a lot of really cheesy graphics and stuff like that. And then it sort of came into its own, and I was like, oh man, I better take this seriously. Then I fell in love with it.
Oh yeah.
And so, you know, seeing all these renderers come up, like Octane, Arnold, all these things, got me into cinema. And, you know, now I'm starting to see Houdini kind of coming up the same way and creeping up into the space a little bit. And, but the thing about Houdini is that it's got the stigma, right?
Yes, it does.
It's got a pretty big stigma attached to it. And I think they're doing a really good job. And I think it's large, and it's really has a lot to do with people like yourself and Trevor and other people. And even, I would say, I'm going to space on his name. Simon, help me out here.
Holmadel?
Yes, thank you.
There's actually two Simons. There's Simon Holmadel, and then there's Simon Fiedler? Yeah. He does some really amazing Houdini work.
Yeah. I think Simon Holmendel is really what was the first thing. It was the first time I saw a designer using Houdini in a way that appealed to me.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And when I saw that, I was like, oh, okay. That's interesting, because up until then, I would say that a more technically minded designer didn't have a lot of options.
Right.
There wasn't, you know, you could kind of do quite a bit in MoGraph and Cinema. You could, you know, I mean, honestly, that was probably it, really. You can't really do any of those sorts of things in Maya or even Max, really.
Right.
So when I saw him, like, totally go crazy in some of that early Man V work, I think it was the Nike, sort of the quintessential Houdini Nike thing. I forget what it was, might have been Flyknit or something. I don't remember. I'll figure it out. I'll put it in the show notes. But when I saw that, I was like, okay, yeah, this is legit. I mean, I'm going to start paying attention to this. And then, of course, it just kept growing and growing. More people started using it. Smaller studios started using it. And now I feel like it's everywhere. Now I feel like quite a few artists are telling me, like, I need to learn it, or I'm learning it, or I'm already using it.
Yep.
What the heck, man? Like, how, what was it that drew you to Houdini, and how did you start?
Man, that's a good question. So I've always enjoyed kind of splitting my time between things that are very kind of creatively fulfilling and also very technically fulfilling. And so Houdini had always kind of had this kind of mystique around it as being this incredibly technical beast of a program that, you know, I think I picked it up, man, I must have picked it up like 8 years ago for the first time, and beat my head against the wall for a couple of weeks, and then just was like, nope, I can't do this. And then I'd pick it up like once a year, once every few months, be like, well, maybe this is the time I'll learn Houdini. And I just, it never stuck. But
sounds familiar.
yeah, exactly. It, like I said, it took me like five tries to finally get it sort of stuck in there. Right. But a few years back, I started doing something just for my own personal development, where like in the very beginning of the year, I would kind of make myself a personal promise, right? Like that this is going to be the year that I learn X, or that I do X, or whatever it is. Right. Mm-hmm. And each year is kind of different. And, the year that I decided I was going to learn Houdini, I kind of dubbed the year of the node. And I was like, this is it. I'm doing it. No matter what I do this year, I am learning this stupid program. And I really committed to using it like every single day. And I got really sucked into the way that it works. The problem that I ran into was that like the stuff that's available, the learning materials on SideFX's website, they're awesome for learning like the nitty gritty of the program, you know, like figuring out like what buttons do what, and like you can get a list of all the different nodes that are available in whatever context and everything. But there wasn't a ton, at least at the time, to show you how to use it. You know, I mean, there is a bit out there, but it really, the resources that we have now didn't exist then. And so it was really me just kind of like beating my head against the wall and learning it like the hard way by myself with no help. And it took a good long time, but I got it eventually.
Yeah. I feel like, most of the stuff out there, and I spent a little time looking at what's out there when I was, you know, thinking about learning it. And for me, it was very much centered around things that I wasn't interested in. It was like, oh, here's how to do some destruction, or here's how to do some smoke.
Yep.
And really, I was trying to find a way to understand why I would want to use it, or what I would want to use it for. And I think that I totally can relate, man, like diving in to a program and really forcing yourself to use it every day is a great way to do it. Because that's how I learned Substance Designer, is I just decided, like, I'm going to learn it. This is it. I'm doing it. I'm jumping in. Here I go. And every day it's a commitment. Every day it's like, what am I going to learn today? What am I going to pick out and like try to understand today. Now that program is, you know, it's not, I wouldn't say simple, but it's not Houdini. Like, how long did it take you to the point where you were like, I feel confident in this program?
Man, it was quite a journey for sure. I have, you know, folders and folders and folders of like stupid little experiments I was doing where I was trying to figure out how to, you know, turn one piece of data into another piece of data, or like use something in a way that I thought it should be used. And turns out I was completely wrong and had to go back and do it in a completely different way. And it, you know, learning that way was very slow. It was very frustrating, but it did teach me kind of how to really think like Houdini wants you to think. Because I was approaching it, you know, the way I would approach a problem in Cinema 4D, or the way that I would use Cinema 4D, and it just isn't the way that Houdini wants you to work. And I think as soon as you understand that, as soon as you kind of get your head wrapped around the way that it wants you to think and solve problems, it really, it kind of opens some doors for you a little bit in that right. program.
You have to surrender yourself to the way that Houdini sort of operates, right?
Yeah, very much so. It's just a totally different way of solving problems. Now, I will say that Cinema, ever since R20, some of the new field workflows and everything are kind of starting to tread in the Houdini waters a little bit in terms of the way that you use the information. But Houdini is really built on this, like, this crazy procedural way of approaching problems.
Yeah, you know, my brain sort of works that way naturally. It's something that, like, I've always, you know, use Cinema 4D, and I'm like, oh man, why doesn't MoGraph and Fields have nodes, or why doesn't X Particles have nodes? Because I can't remember what I did, and I just want to be able to like trace my steps and like, oh, this was going into here, that was going into there.
Yep.
So for me, like, nodes make perfect sense. Like, I came from, you know, pflow and 3ds Max, Fusion,
absolutely,
XSI Ice, and like things like that. So for me, nodes are like it's like how I think anyway.
Yeah.
But the hurdle for me in Houdini was always that I didn't know where to start. You know, like there was never any until I started watching your training, I wasn't really like, I knew the concepts of it. Like, I knew it was procedural. I knew that it was data and, like, you know, you could do anything and all that stuff. And sometimes being able to do anything is extremely frightening.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's like a menu with too many items. You don't know what to pick. You're like, I can't make a decision.
Yeah, dude. Like, yeah. You just freeze. Like, I would open the program, I'd be like, I don't even know what. Like, and I did the thing that you said in like the first video, I think, where you're like, don't touch these buttons up at the top that are like, you know, the preset, you know, tools or whatever they are. And I made that mistake. Like, when I first opened it, I'm like, whoa, that looks like some stuff I should click.
Yeah.
And I like would click it and I'd be like, I don't know what I just did.
What
and
the hell happened?
It was like, okay. I got to say, like, and I'm not trying to like, blow smoke up your, but that first two videos in the training where you sort of like lay it out and you're like, listen, like, you don't have to be afraid of this. This is how this works. You don't this is like, it's okay. And that was so reassuring. And like, so much of like I could almost like feel your hand on my back. Like, hey, Chad, it's going to be all right. You know? And it was such a, I even IM'd Mike at Grayscale Gorilla. And I was like, dude, this guy, he's making me feel like he's right here with me. Like, this is great. And it was great. And like I said, you know, it's a program that I've been trying to get into, and I'm excited to finish out the videos and try to like understand more about it. Now, when you're tackling, I got to ask you this question, because it's something that I'm always fascinated by, people that use Houdini, because to me, it seems like, you know, you hear these people talk like, oh yeah, you know, like Houdini is great if you know exactly what you want to do and you can go in there and do it. And like, yeah. But how do you just freestyle bash stuff out?
That's a good question. And it's not freestyle in Houdini is a little bit different than something in cinema, right? Because cinema, you're so kind of hands on with your final product, right? Like you're pushing and pulling points, or you're setting up something in the MoGraph module, and you can see kind of like as you take steps, you can see things kind of unfolding. And then sometimes in Houdini, you can't. Sometimes you're kind of trusting. Oh, sorry, my wife just got
there's the dog.
So sometimes with Houdini, you're kind of just trusting what you know about the program and kind of taking, you're almost taking like tried and true paths and kind of breaking those apart and experimenting with those in a way. Trying to think of like, so I had a discussion with a couple of the Perception folks a little while ago. A couple of the guys were really interested in learning Houdini, and they saw this piece that was Danil. Oh, I'm gonna murder his last name.
I do it all the time, so don't worry.
Yeah, Kravuchko. Yeah, I don't know. He's an absolute wizard in Houdini. Really, really cool stuff. And I'd say he's doing some fascinating motion graphic style work in Houdini, which is awesome.
So do you think he has this? Now I'm a firm believer in the power of abstract thought and just the idea of like, for me, I tend to, before I even like pick up my mouse and like start working, I tend to like visualize what it is that I'm trying to do in my head about 10 different times before I actually commit to doing it.
Yeah.
And I feel like really amazing Houdini artists must have that ability as well, right?
Yeah, I think to a degree you do kind of gain that the more you use Houdini. It really does force you to think about problems differently and how you solve problems. Mm-hmm. You just take a totally different approach to getting from point A to point B than you do with something like Cinema 4D. And I think there's certain problems out there that I find way easier to solve in Houdini versus problems where Houdini is not the right tool for the job, you know? And I think it's really down to kind of where you feel comfortable. And sometimes it's actually, you know, I mean, sometimes you want to force yourself to be uncomfortable, right? Like if you're learning Houdini and you're bound to learn it, like you got to do it. Like sometimes you got to force yourself into that uncomfortable space. But on a tight deadline, sometimes that's not really the way to go, of course.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes that's unrealistic, but sometimes that's the best way to learn.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely. And that's sort of what I did, was I started really digging into solving problems in Houdini once I got sort of comfortable with the application and how to just create with it, how to think like it wants you to think.
That's the ultimate challenge, I think, you know. Yeah. with any tool that you learn is like you're trying to get to a point where it's like playing an instrument, you know, like you want to get to that point where you can just play music. Yep. That you're not having to constantly look down at the guitar, you have to constantly look at the sheet music or whatever. You just want to get to that place where you can flow. And I feel like that it never comes easy, right? Like it takes time. You got to learn all the chords. You got to like memorize the music, or you just need to really be comfortable and confident enough to be able to handle it.
Right.
Now, the thing that's always like hard with Houdini is like, it seems like it's got a pretty, it takes a while to master it, and it must take a while to understand how it wants you to think. And ultimately, I think a big hurdle that I know I fell into, that I think a lot of people out there fall into, is that you don't know what all the nodes are doing, or what you don't know which one to grab when.
Yep. And some of them are named like really weird things, or some have like multiple functions that are kind of buried in submenus within the node's parameters, where you're like, I didn't know I could do that with that node. That makes sense. Okay, sure. Like the trail sop, also will calculate velocity for you if you want it to. That's, you know, that has nothing to do with creating trails, except under the hood, what it's doing is it's using the data that creates the trails and actually extrapolating velocity vectors from it, right? So it's after you think about it, you're like, oh yeah, no, that does kind of make sense. But at first you're like, why on earth would I use the trail node to calculate velocity? That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I mean, how would you even... That's the thing about this sort of program, and not, you know, for those people that are freelance that are working on their own without somebody to like roll over to the other side of the room and ask them, like, how do you even find that out? Like, how do you just stumble on that?
Yeah, it's a lot of it is getting out there into the various communities. Oddforce, there's also a really good, there's a great Discord called Think Procedural. That has a huge number of people involved in it, including many, many people from Side Effects. So there's a handful of communities out there that really cater specifically to Houdini, and they get asked the questions all the time. And a lot of times people will, you know, respond to you with a project file that they've actually solved your problem for you. And then you can, the great thing is you can take it and you can reverse engineer everything that they've done, because it's all nodes, and it helps you learn. That's how you learn. And it does get frustrating, because there's lots and lots of things that are, like it's sort of like learning a language. You have your, like, you have the things that make sense, your structure, but then you also have like little idioms and things that get sprinkled in where you're like, huh, I didn't realize that that's how you do that, but now I know. And you know, so I always encourage people to keep a Google Doc or a notebook or something so that you can take note of those things yourself, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's super important. And I feel like, you know, in my beginnings of learning Houdini, I started I think I was using OneNote when I started working in it. And I just was writing down all of the acronyms and the strange words. And
yep.
I was trying to like familiarize myself with the vernacular so that I could at least understand what things were doing what. And I think that, you know, one of the strengths of that program is, like you said, like you can go back in and reverse engineer
yep.
something that either you did a long time ago or somebody shared with you online. How much of that are you repurposing on job to job? Like, do you build something that you're like, oh, well, I figured this out, I'm going to go through this in my library and never have to do it again?
Yeah, sometimes. So Houdini is great at reusing node structures and allowing you to build your own tools. So you can actually take a pipeline that you've developed and actually turn it into a tool that just becomes another node in your node list, right? So you can create your own nodes that are really handy for you in your workflow. So I have a handful of things that I do all the time. And, you know, it's not like super complex, but it's annoying to have to set these things up every single time I want to do it. So I just build myself a tool, and then I have my tool that I built. And if it doesn't do what I want it to do, I can get in there and monkey with the internals of it, or I can leave it alone and just go about my business. But it's, Houdini is great at compartmentalizing problem solving like that, and, and really giving you the ability to reuse workflows over and over and over and over again. It's awesome like that.
So what is your absolute favorite node to pull out in Houdini?
Oh man. You know, I'm going to go with,
I stumped you on that one.
Tough. That's a tough one. So
he loves them all, folks.
I do. It's true. One of my favorite things about Houdini is that in Cinema 4D, splines are separate from geometry, right? Because a spline is just sort of it's a one-dimensional thing, essentially, until you start curving, and then it's two-dimensional, but it still doesn't have like volume to it. And Houdini,
right.
A spline or a curve actually is a one-dimensional polygon. So it's a one-dimensional polygon spread between two points, or, you know, multiple points or whatever. And so I love that I can do things like take the connect adjacent pieces node, or use like find shortest path, or use the add sop, and actually create these like physical connections. Cause I do a lot of like FUI stuff, which is, futuristic user interface. It's lots of like greebly elements and things that look really overly complicated.
Sure.
And
it's perfect for Houdini.
Yeah, exactly.
Couldn't ask for a better program.
Yeah, it works wonderfully. So I love the ability to like physically connect objects using dynamically generated spline curves, essentially, that are themselves actual physical geometry within Houdini. They aren't treated as anything separate, like they are in Cinema 4D, right? Like a spline and a cube are two separate things, two separate constructs within Cinema 4D, where in Houdini, a spline or a curve is just a one-dimensional cube, essentially, or, you know, it's not a cube because it didn't have that many points, but it's a one-dimensional polygon stretched between two points.
Yeah. That's a really weird way to think about it.
Yeah. Yeah. And it actually creates some really interesting things that you can do. Like you can apply UVs to a spline curve, which is incredibly handy for finding out where along a curve something might fall, or coloring it for rendering in like redshift or whatever, or like growing it, or like placing objects on it. It sounds really weird and unintuitive, but you can actually UV a curve, which is awesome.
Yeah, that's great, man. All right. So that's sort of answers the question. I guess the other question would be, if you could change any part of Houdini, what would you change?
You know, there's a handful of things about Houdini that drive me a little crazy. But honestly, I don't know that I would change much of anything. I think the strength in Houdini kind of comes from those areas that make you maybe a little bit uncomfortable because they're not quite familiar territory, but that's sort of the nature of using the program. One of the things that I do always find very challenging about Houdini has less to do with the program and more to do with the company Side Effects. They have no problems whatsoever just throwing out old workflows and old nodes and everything and saying, okay, this is how you do it now. And so every single release of Houdini, there's always some crazy thing that they did that you used to do that you now do totally differently. And, sometimes that works really well and sometimes it really gets in the way. I really admire their commitment to continually refining the program. And they, you know, they've been doing an amazing job since I've been using the program. They really have spent a great deal of time working on kind of helping people overcome that learning curve, you know, that's so prevalent in using this program. It's like everybody thinks about like, oh, geez, this program's super hard. But they've done a great job in their kind of UX workflows and kind of restructuring a lot of their systems to kind of streamline a little bit, to kind of bring under one umbrella a lot of things. Like when I first started using Houdini, particle systems were actually a totally separate dynamic network from, say, like a rigid body simulation, right? Mm-hmm. And you could get them to talk to each other, but it was, you know, at the time for me, it was like, you know, pulling teeth to try and figure out how to get that to work. But now, I think since Houdini 14, we're on 17.5 as of right now. I think Houdini 14, they kind of unified all of the dynamic systems. So particles and all of the dynamic systems are kind of under one umbrella. So you can kind of work with them all in one system. And it's things like that. They revamped the visual language of the nodes and everything. They really gave the user tools for customizing things and making it what they want it to be, right? And it drives me crazy every time I open a new version of Houdini, and they changed a whole bunch of stuff that I used to love. But at the same time, I really admire them for kind of continuing to refine their product, even some of their old systems and old ways of doing things. They're totally happy just throwing it out the window and telling you you're going to do it somewhere else now.
That's kind of, I mean, that sounds like they align with my own personal philosophies. I'm the same way. Like, I have no problem throwing out 8 hours of work if I don't think it's what I wanted, and like totally. Starting over. Yeah, I admire that, actually. I feel like if a developer can do that, that shows that they're truly committed to putting out the absolute best thing that they can put out, and they're not just keeping something alive for the sake of keeping it alive. And you know, that's actually pretty admirable.
Yeah.
You know,
absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, so I guess we're starting to wrap up here, but I want to actually ask you, what sort of advice would you give to an artist that is thinking about, let me rewind that. I'm going to hit you with a different question first.
Sure.
Do you think it is important for the motion designer today to know Houdini?
No, but I will say, if you can learn Houdini, if you are motivated to learn it, then it is an invaluable tool to have in your arsenal. Do you need to know it? No. Do you want to know it? If you're the kind of person who wants to sink their teeth into it, then you should absolutely do it, because it really does teach you a lot more than just its own workflows, right? Like, you see the world of 3D a little bit differently, because it kind of pulls the curtain off of so many things that other programs kind of gloss over or hide behind nice shiny buttons. Houdini teaches you about 3D itself.
Yeah, I'm really stoked that you gave such an honest response there, because I do feel like there is a lot of like sort of pressure on motion designers, 3D motion designers to be specific, to learn every single new little thing that comes out, and I think that it's okay to understand what, you know, to say, okay, well, that doesn't really, I don't need to learn that, and that's right. Okay.
Yeah.
And I think that that's a healthy way to sort of look at things. And I'm glad that you said that, even though I think if you are thinking about learning Houdini, Grayscale Gorilla Plus is a great place to do that. Russ is teaching has an amazing piece of training up there centered around getting started with Houdini. Sort of I'm going to, you know, hold your hand while you navigate this crazy node world. What advice do you have to somebody like that, that's just starting out, that might start watching your training? Like, what advice do you have for that person?
I think in terms of learning the program, my number one advice is always just keep notes for yourself as you go. It's a program where there's lots of like ins and outs and gotchas, you know, like not everything is super intuitive. And sometimes you might beat your head against the wall for days or hours or whatever, trying to solve a problem. But once you solve that problem, now you know how to do it. So you want to write it down and keep that for yourself. There's actually a total side note. There's a fantastic online resource called the CG Wiki, written by this guy named Matt Estella, who is, I believe, a TD at Animal Logic in Australia. And I believe it started out as his own kind of notes to himself as he was transitioning from Softimage to Houdini. He was kind of taking these notes for himself and putting them out there on the internet. And it has grown into this like really amazing kind of firsthand account of His learning process, he puts things in really plain English terms, you know, and breaks it down in really great ways. So like, it's like if you took, you know, somebody's Google Doc of notes and just made it public and polished it up a bit and had some nice, like, kind of animated GIFs to go along with some of the concepts. It's awesome. It's really, really cool for the Houdini learners. But I think approaching Houdini, just before you even open the program, you kind of have to prepare yourself for a bit of frustration. I've taught Houdini for the last couple of years at SVA to graduate and undergraduate students. And they always have, you know, a bit of excitement, but also a bit of kind of trepidation approaching the program because everybody hears, oh, it's so hard. It's so hard. And I would say be patient with it. It's not something that most people are going to pick up immediately and just have an innate understanding of, especially if you already know another 3D program. It can be a frustrating journey, but the rewards are worth it. So
that's awesome.
Stick to it. Use it every day.
There you go. There you go, folks. All right. Well, that about does it for our time. Russ, dude, thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Thank you, Chad. This was an absolute pleasure.
Yeah, I'm just super stoked to have you a part of the Grayscale Gorilla Plus squad. And just like, I'm really excited to get myself through this course and really try to dive into this program. It's something that I'm going to try to dive into, I think, over the winter. I'm going to really commit myself to picking it up and actually trying to understand it. So thank you so much for being on the show, and thank you for doing such an awesome job on the training.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. And I'm stoked for people to watch it and let me know what they think.
Awesome. Well, that about does it for the Grayscale Gorilla Podcast. Thank you for listening. Be sure to give us a review anywhere that you're listening to this. It always helps us to get those reviews. And be sure to tell a friend if they're interested in Houdini. Tell them about the podcast. Tell them about Russ's course over on Grayscale Gorilla Plus. Until next time, have a great day. I'll talk to you later.